This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The effort to repeal and replace Obamacare is down for now, but is it out? What does the future of healthcare look like for 1.7 million Floridians who signed up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act? And if Congress instead moves to fix Obamacare, what part could Senators Bill Nelson and Marco Rubio play? Chris Carmody is a shareholder with Gray Robinson. He's a Republican political consultant. Chris, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Also joined by Dick Batchelor, former Florida state lawmaker, also a Democratic political analyst. Thank you so much, Dick.
Thank you.
So I want to start by just talking a little bit about the reaction to the defeat of the Obamacare repeal. Chris Carmody, is this a victory really for folks here who've been lobbying against this repeal, or is it just a pause?
Can I say both? After you got through the gladiator memes of John McCain's thumb down and everything, if you're arguing against, it's definitely a victory. Last year, there were over 1.7 million Floridians signed up through the health exchange of ACA. This year, there were 9 insurers that already had published rates with Office of Insurance Regulation for individual plans. So there's people who were already banking on this surviving and so, or preparing at least for it. And for those who prepared for it, they're probably very much relieved. The insurers who made their business plans accordingly, and the 1.7 million Floridians and probably more going into next year just on the individual plans, not to mention business. But it is, in some regards, a pause. President Trump doubled down on his rhetoric as far as getting some kind of repeal, whether it's a skinny repeal or not. And most of the Republicans involved in the process, other than the 3 that voted against it, have said they're committed to fix it. An interesting note, and I'm sure Dick will want to chime in on this, Bill Nelson, ironically, has been getting a lot of attention as a result of this because of his interesting relationship with Maine Senator Collins and how they've kind of created this moderate coalition to try to figure out, meeting before the vote, meeting since, both former insurance commissioners of their states, they might lead the path to getting something done in the middle.
Dick Batchelor, is that how you see it? Do you see Senator Bill Nelson as one of the key figures in this piece?
I think so, along with Senator Collins, as Chris said, too. I think there's an opportunity for a compromise now that the Senate has failed to repeal Obamacare. I think that they've got to do something. I would hope that the president's not going to fulfill his promise, or his threat, I guess it would be, that he was going to basically suspend the subsidies, basically try to do what he can as president under Secretary Price at HHS to basically disrupt the markets even more, which would be very unfortunate. The fact, the reason it keeps failing is because every bill they come out with uninsures between 26 and 32 million people. The fact is, people have that insurance today. It's not the way it should be. It should be changed. But again, I'm back to the point. I think there is an opportunity for compromise, but I really hope the president does not withhold the subsidies in the marketplace, because that would disrupt the markets totally.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, too, about our other senator here in Florida, Senator Marco Rubio. He made a claim in a Facebook message that Florida actually mandates more coverage than Obamacare. This was checked by PolitiFact, rated mostly false, because they're saying that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, actually has a broader mandate than Florida. I mean, what actually would happen to those 1.7 million customers if Obamacare was repealed?
They'd be out of insurance. They would be without coverage. If you look at some of the proposals in the Senate, though, you had a proposal for what they call this kind of scaled-back skinny version. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, that was a policy that covered very little. The deductibles were extremely high, and the copayments were extremely high, so really almost non-usable. But the other attendant issue on this is the whole Medicaid cuts in Florida. You know, that would really impact Florida a great deal, because there are about 800,000 people would be covered with a Medicaid expansion. We don't have the Medicaid expansion. So you look at really worsening the case.
Chris Carmody, that Medicaid expansion, how important is that, kind of thinking about all the details if Obamacare is repealed, if there's some kind of change to the way it's insurance is done here in Florida?
Well, if it was repealed, the good news is Florida wouldn't have a whole lot of adjustments, because we have not expanded Medicaid as half the states have. But Florida, like any state, will be in a position because, as we said, 1.7 million are already participating in that. Some would obviously find other forms of insurance. But what it comes down to, and why Senator Rubio was frustrated on coverage or not coverage, is until they can get the the rates of increase year over year on the insurance premiums under control this year. Of those nine, I said had published rates for this year, an average rate of increase of 17.8%. Until they can figure out a way to stabilize that, they will continue to be both a Democratic, moderate, and Republican call for some sort of repeal slash fix.
And does it look more like a fix at this point to you?
I think so. I think there's going to be Republicans that are going to, you know, from their cold, dead hands, say, we're not going to go away from this repeal. But there's others, based on this vote that went down, that will say, we have to do something. And I think if you poll Americans, or they have polled Americans, pre-existing conditions is something that we'll have to tell our kids and grandkids how it never existed before in insurance coverage, because most people say it's got to stay. Mm-hmm. Everyone is affected by someone, or has someone in their family that's affected by that. But the rates and such, that's what needs to be fixed. So pre-existing conditions, I think, will be something that Democrats and Republicans find common ground on. And then it's just a matter of what do you do to tweak the law on certain coverage areas to help just stabilize those rates.
Let me switch gears now, and let's talk about Stephanie Murphy, U.S. Representative Stephanie Murphy's seat. She's a freshman, a Democrat here in Central Florida. Challenges, though, there are some people lining up saying they're interested in taking a run at this seat. Chris Carmody, David Simmons, is he one of the contenders here?
Well, he's 95% in, according to the articles. I think David wants to do it and will do it. He's based in Seminole County. He's been on the ballot up there as a Republican for, it seems, for the last 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. Very well liked. Has a moderate position. Certainly he's taken his conservative positions as a Republican, but I think he can appeal to the moderate base. But there are others, as we all know. Representative Mike Miller has also jumped in. He's, in a way, kind of a unicorn in the Republican Party. His House district was, he was the only Republican in that district that did better than the Democrat. Orange County has long since gone the Democratic side, so no surprise that Hillary beat Trump. But even Patrick Murphy, who was at that point when the elections came around, it was fait accompli, he was going to lose to Rubio. He beat Rubio by 4 or 5 points. Miller was the only one that actually won in that district. So in a lot of ways, he's viewed as this unicorn of sorts, if he can beat Democrats in a sort of swing seat. But I think depending on who gets out of the primary, Simmons or him will both line up well against Congresswoman Murphy.
Dick Batchelor, if you were running Stephanie Murphy's re-election campaign, who would you be looking at with most interest here?
Well, first of all, we refresh our memories that she beat a 24-year incumbent. So obviously, she obviously has a lot of prowess. But also, we had to attend to that was about $5 million of campaign expenditure. So obviously, the question is the DCCC going to really line up behind her this time and put that kind of money in the race?
Why wouldn't they?
Well, I think they will. Right now, Charles Cook calls it a toss-up race, so it's going to be a very competitive race. Republicans are going to put a lot of money in this race. Mike Miller used to work for Congressman McCollum, so he's got some background in the Congress. He's been a very effective freshman legislator. But David Simmons has been there, as Chris said, for a very long time. Number one was a House member, then senator. But there was some discussion about him maybe running for Attorney General for the state of Florida. Hmm. But it looks like he's leaning, as Chris said, maybe 95% towards getting the congressional race. So if he does, it's strong because his district really makes up a lot of that congressional district. So he'd be a strong candidate.
So this could be a pretty interesting Republican primary.
Very interesting.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With me in the studio, political consultants Dick Batchelor and Chris Carmody. Well, let's talk about South Florida for a minute. Republican Jose Felix Diaz and Democrat Annette Tadeo in a special election. Tell me about the election. What's going on here and what's the significance for the state?
So that is a special election to replace Frank Artiles, who resigned during session this past year. By the numbers, that is a Democratic seat. Mm-hmm. Frank Artiles went up against Dwight Bullard in the last election cycle. So that is a primarily Hispanic Democrat seat. Mm-hmm. Dwight Bullard is an African-American, now former senator. You could get into the weeds of, did he campaign hard enough? Many thought that Senator Bullard wasn't campaigning very hard, not to mention demographically, he didn't necessarily fit that Senate district, whereas Frank Artiles from that district worked very hard. Mm-hmm. Sort of the hard charging style that got him elected is what also led to his demise, you could argue. And here we are now. You still have a Democratic seat by the numbers that leans Hispanic, which many argue will make it a little easier for Annette Tadeo. I know Jeff Clemons, the state senator from South Florida, he's running the campaign coffers for the Democratic Party. They're going to put quite a bit behind her. And I think if the election was today, it was probably hers to lose just based on numbers mm-hmm. and who's going to show up. That being said, Jose Pepe, as many know him at Tallahassee, Diaz, he is one of the hardest working members in the, formerly in the House before he resigned, now maybe in the Senate. He's going to work it very hard. He's going to get a lot of money, both from the party, from Senate majority and others. And it's going to be a fight down there. There's going to be a lot of ads. It'll probably get nasty. I've already seen that the Democrats have already started to run with the fact that he was on The Apprentice with our current president when he was just a television host back then. They're going to take advantage of that, and they're going to try to make this a referendum in many ways about Trump and to see how he plays down there.
Dick Batchelor, what does it mean for the Democrats if they get the seat back?
Well, today it would be the first female Hispanic in the Senate, which would be so a historical opportunity for those in the Hispanic population, number one. But number two, getting back to Diaz's campaign, keep in mind, he spent $2 million. He spent $2 million in a Senate race, in a local race, which is an amazing amount of money. So even though the numbers tend to be Democratic, if he can raise another $2 or $3 million, I mean, obviously that is that's an indicator that he can do very, very well. Also, unfortunately, she's got some bad press, and I hope she can work it out. But basically, they came out in the media, which is never good, that American Express wants $38,000 that she owes them. And I can see now an ad: if you can't be physically responsible, you know, how can you govern? So I can see that. Hopefully, she'll get that resolved. But it's there. It's out now. It'll be in the campaign fodder that goes out. But it's going to be. I agree with Chris. It's going to be a very close race. But the Republicans will spend a tremendous amount of money in that race.
Yeah, they'll probably double what they spent in that primary. Yeah. Now he was taking on a bit of a family legacy in the Diaz de la Portilla. Many of them had been. Alex was a former senator coming back. His brother had served Senate previously. So it was money well spent, because name ID again, right. At the beginning of that special primary, Diaz was down and he knew it. He had to fight in there. So it'll be a tough one. A fun fact in that House district that Jose Diaz left open, it was Jose Malia and Daniel Perez. Malia was endorsed by Jeb Bush, which is usually the gold standard down there. And he out-fundraised Perez, but Perez ended up winning pretty handily with less money. So that's an interesting signal of shifts down there in South Florida. A lot of folks didn't see that one coming.
I want to finally ask about the governor's race. Speaking of money, Dick Batchelor, how much money has been raised by some of these Democratic candidates? Is it enough? How much more do they need?
Not as enough as Adam Putnam's raising. He's raising about $13 million, I think, so far. So the Democrats haven't raised that much money. Gwen Graham seems to be ahead with about $2.5-3 million. Philip Levine, the mayor of Miami Beach, he's put it over two of his own money in the race.
Is he actually an official candidate yet?
He's not an official candidate yet, but he's certainly making all the noise about it. He's got a pack. He's raised his money. And the question about the mayor is whether or not he's willing to spend any of his personal net worth, which is estimated to be about $100 million. Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, kind of got off a good start, got some good press, only raised about $750,000. And all of a sudden, a story comes out that the FBI wants to talk to him and his staff about some shenanigans, alleged shenanigans at City Hall in Tallahassee. Well, obviously, your fundraising stopped. I think he raised no money for 1 month, and $10,000 came in one check the second month. So he's not raising any money right now. Anytime you mention FBI and candidate, people tend to steer far and wide and far away. Chris King has raised some money, but he's putting a lot of his own money in that race, too. He started out with $1 million in the race. He's from the Winter Park, Orlando area. But he's traveling the state a great deal and getting a lot of coverage, so he's out there. But in the end, you know, you're talking about a race combined that's going to be at least $100 million. So $1 million here and $1 million there doesn't do anything. It gets back to, I think, Gwen Graham, because of her father being Senator Bob Graham, Governor Bob Graham. She has a name recognition. She'd only served one term in the Congress and decided not to run because they reapportioned her out, essentially. But I think name recognition, not number one right now, she puts her up. But Mayor Levine, if he gets in the race and willing to spend some of his personal net worth, then it could be a very, very strong challenge in the primary.
Chris Carmody, Adam Putnam, has he made any missteps so far? Is he doing okay?
You could argue he's made some missteps. He is the front runner, and he's got, I think, $11 million on hand. He's raised about $15 million, spent some of that in the early month to get his name out. There's, you know, he knows he's going to get flanked on the right. Richard Corcoran has almost all but entered into the race. He said he won't announce until after session, but he raised $2 million in his watchdog pack. He'll probably raise more these coming months. Ron DeSantis, congressman from the Daytona Beach, Flagler area, a committee tied to him by his former chair of a previous committee, has over $1 million in the bank. Corcoran's got 2+ million. We'll continue to get more as he gets close to session and continues to fundraise. So those are two on the right of Putnam. And then you've got Jack Latvala, probably on the left of Putnam in the Republican Party. He's the Senate Appropriations Chairman, longtime legislator from Pinellas County. He's got 3+ million in his political committee. And his between he and his son and their tweets and their social media, it's pretty clear where he's headed. Sometime in August or early September, he'll announce for the gubernatorial race. And so here's Putnam in the middle. So has he had missteps? No major ones, but he's trying to figure out that fine line of being right, hence talking about NRA and guns on campus, which also kind of alarmed a few people. A lot of folks had never seen him take that position. And I saw recently he had his tweets about fake news and CNN and such, which again, you can agree with him or disagree with him, but some people say, do you need to do that right now? The primary is not for another year. But they're looking at numbers. They're going across the state, and they have to walk that fine line of trying to keep the right shored up and not let some of his congressional votes get in the way of that, and but also not lose the left, which probably is going to be more in line to go with him to someone like Latvala.
Well, Chris Carmody is a shareholder with Gray Robinson, a Republican political consultant. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome.
Also joined by former Democratic state lawmaker Dick Batchel, now Democratic political analyst. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, the number of pregnant women addicted to opioids is growing.
This is our bubonic plague, our cholera, our Spanish flu. And how our medical community and communities at large react to it is really going to show our mettle and how it will be how we are judged in the future.
So what options do addicted pregnant women have for recovering and detoxing, and what happens post-pregnancy? Intersections back in a minute.